Welcome to AFCAST Music. This is Marlene Sokol Stewart, and I'm your host. God Almighty, I am so thankful for this podcast, for giving me a chance to bring humanity into the light of hope, love, kindness. I didn't get to attend a No Kings protest, but my husband did. His sign read, "Make Orwell Fiction Again." Yeah, pretty good sign. Maybe it made a difference, maybe it didn't, but I think people feel better by having their basically primal screams out there saying enough. Enough about that, too. My guest today is really special. Today, I'm talking with Issues. Hip-hop, and a community leader, teaches school, works with kids, has a martial arts and boxing business that he really tries to mentor those people to adapt and be ready. And he even does face painting for kids, for goodness sake. His real name is Ishmael Cuthbertson. And it's funny because Ishmael in Judaism means God will hear. And I do believe this young man God is listening to. I had Ish on my initial list of guests I would like to have on AFCAST Music. And I'm not really sure why it never came to fruition, but it didn't. But then I met him at the 2025 IndieCon, and I was a panelist, and he was a performer at the event. And I got to sit down with him briefly. But in those few minutes, I felt like I had been shot with an arrow in my heart that released kindness, gentleness, and warmth. I even asked him, what's going on here? I felt such a strong spiritual connection with him. I asked him with no hesitance, "Will you be on my podcast?" He answered with no hesitance as well and said, "I'd love to." Here is my conversation with Ish, as he likes to be called, but it's Issues, or if you want to call him and refer to him as his real name, Ishmael Cuthbertson. It's a conversation for the books. Well, Issue, welcome to AFCAST Music. I met you at Cine for the 2025 IndieCon event that Montu Miller put on, who was on this podcast as well. What a wonderful guy he is as well. And we sat down and I kind of grabbed you and said, you know, I'd like to talk to you. I mean, if I don't take my opportunities to talk to people and see if they'll come on my podcast that I want on my podcast, I sometimes never get the chance again.
Wow.
So you were there that night. I was there that night, and I knew that I needed to talk to you, so I came and talked to you. And I think I told you that I loved you, but not in a biblical sense. And I'm like, what is going on here? What is going on here? You know, your conversation, the way you talked in such this calm, peaceful way, which I am so not like that. You could see that you were a very pensive person. You liked a lot of things that I said, and I loved a lot of things that you said. So I am really happy to have you because I really do have you on my very first list to look for. And somehow,
how long ago was that?
Kayla, I think it was 2023.
Wow.
When we started putting it together. Right? Something like that.
So for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of people I have not talked to on that list as well.
Right.
So I don't know what happened because you've always been on the Walk of Fame, which
2023,
it's sort of a given, really, that you should do somebody on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always happen. As you can see on the back of my T-shirts, the first season, you know, I was trying so hard to get anybody I knew just to start this with me. And that's going to change pretty soon. That's going to go all the way to season 4.
Wow.
And we are now in season 5, but we changed it up a little bit. We're going to do longer seasons, I think.
Yeah.
We kind of changed it up to be every other week.
Okay.
So this won't well, actually, this is going to air, I think, Thursday.
Thursday?
Yeah, okay. Because because of the cancellations and what happened and all that stuff. But so you came to Athens headstrong.
Yes, that's one way of putting it.
You had been to D.C.
I was born in D.C.
You were born in D.C., okay. Mm-hmm. Trenton, Philly, my territories, Trenton and Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Oakland, my twins' territory for 20 years, so that was my territory for 20 years. New Orleans, been there plenty, but...
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines in your song says, you know, you've been all these places and it's possible to be what other people couldn't see.
Mm.
When you got here, did people see you? Did people know you?
No.
How did you make a statement here? How did you say, hey, this is me?
Tenacity, determination. I knew, see, it's two versions of when I got here. Is when I got here in high school.
Okay.
And that was after all of those things we mentioned. I moved from, I spent my middle school years, well, it was middle school here, it was junior high in New Orleans.
Okay, that's where,
so I spent my junior high years in New Orleans. And I moved here my after a year.
But there was a lot of music there. So
yeah,
you had
but
to
I
be
wasn't into music.
You weren't.
Mm-mm.
You know, that happens in middle
school. Yeah, no, I was, you know, in middle school, I was into football and primarily, my father, my uncles, my cousin, they had a vending business. If you've been to New Orleans, you've seen the street vendors and whatever.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, my dad, my father and my uncles and my cousins, they kind of had a little monopoly on street vending. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So as I'm 10, 11 years old, you know, started as soon as I could count money and, you help load the van up, you know, we out there, stop, take a look, and conducting business and transactions and holding on to hundreds of dollars at a time, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
As this is all before high school. So I spent my middle, junior high school, I would go to school during the week, of course, and then every weekend, we either in Desire Projects, We either set up in Desire Projects, or Algiers Flea Market. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, whoa, yeah.
Yeah, Algiers Flea Market.
That was kind of a rough place then, wasn't it, Algiers?
Yeah.
You didn't really, get to do many good things there, did you? Other
well,
than
I mean, we, you know, we
your
we,
business,
you know, exactly. But New Orleans East, New Orleans West, West Bank, East Bank, you know, like my pops and them was hustlers. When we first got to New Orleans, I remember my pops because he was actually on the run at the time. So he couldn't get a legitimate job. So he would have a rucksack, army rucksack full of incense, put it on his shoulder, walk, come back home, money to feed the family. So that's where it started. And
wow,
it started
that's
from
a
there.
That's a hard start.
Yeah,
so that's a where hard start.
Taking care of how many of us was it? Five kids, two grown women, five kids, rucksack. So it started from there, and then as started selling clothes and. You know what I'm saying? Pocketbooks and watches and, you know what I'm saying? Because that's like, you know, like in New Orleans, that's, I don't know how it is now, but that used to be where everybody shopped. Nobody went to the mall and Bloomingdale's and all that kind of
stuff.
Was
that because it was all stolen and it was cheap?
No, not necessarily stolen. It wasn't necessarily, but it was just like,
kind of,
like you could say
really
cheap, you could say whatever, you know what I'm saying? But like most people went to Canal Street to cop their wares, you know what I'm saying? Nice watches, nice... Whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, we did that. And then...
And you guys had the goods.
Yeah. Yeah. So as a kid, like, I grew up, like I said, count money, Mardi Gras. So, I'm out there Mardi Gras, middle of the night, getting into all types of, yeah, Canal Street.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So
by the time I moved here to Athens, so that's why I said it's two versions of when I got here. So when I moved here the first time, I was 15. So this is all before 15. So when I moved here, I'm 15, and I'm just starting my ninth grade year of high school.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go?
Clark Central.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so I wasn't necessarily into music, not making music. I wasn't, you know, I was an artist and just trying to find my way. I felt like, so when you asked that question, did people see me? I never really had a place. I never fit in. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Even as you listening to me talk, people say that all the time. Like, yo, you never got rid of an up north accent. Think about it. I spent time in all these different places and I still have a New Jersey accent. So.
Do you think that's the place that you, because you were young, that mm-hmm. that's where you kind of learned the dialect and the and it's still your favorite dialect because it's still mine?
Right.
And I'm a Jersey girl, too. So,
right.
And I just say, once a Jersey girl, always a Jersey
girl.
Yeah,
that's just what it
is. And I wasn't born in Jersey, mm-hmm. but I'm a Jersey girl.
Right. Same thing with me.
Because I'm family of 10, and
mm-hmm.
and same thing. Mother died early. You know, me just learning on the streets.
Yeah. A lot of my uncles and people who of influence were all back east people.
Mm-hmm.
So even as I was young, I still hung. Like, my dad don't talk with a Georgia accent. He got a, you know what I mean? Like, everybody who's always had some sort of influence on my life have all been, you know, old school, back east dudes, Philly, Jersey, whatever the case may be. So I guess wherever I was, whether it's New Orleans or whether it's Georgia or wherever it is, you know, those are still my influences. And throughout all those places, Jersey was always the return home. We in New Orleans, mm-hmm. we go back to Jersey. We mm-hmm. here, we go back to Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm in Georgia every year, we going back to Jersey. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Then I went back to Jersey and stayed, and then I came back as Issues. And that's the second.
Now how come you came back as Issues?
Okay, so when I left, I was just right after high school. I'm just getting into rap. Right?
Anybody you could, or?
No, I'll always listen to rap.
Mm-hmm.
Hip hop has always been really the only genre of music I've ever listened to my whole life. I mean, I like other genres of music as well, but I don't have no, you know, my dad grew up and my mom grew up listening. My parents didn't listen to music. You know what I'm saying? So I discovered hip hop and that's been my love. And that's all I mean. Secondarily, you know, rock and jazz and all these different things that I discovered later on, R&B or whatever it is, but it's always been hip hop. You know what I'm saying? So I've always had an uncanny ability to, if I hear a song that I like, I got to hear it 2 times and I know all the words. You know what I'm saying?
You're my son. He loves hip hop. He loves it. He always has. Yeah. And he can sing so many of them. He'll be in the car just singing them all.
That's where it starts.
But so you're so young, you get here and everything, but what did that work and that Canal Street and your dad having to carry a rucksack mm-hmm. because he might have to take off any second too, you know?
I just got to stop you. I'm going to let you go. I didn't even say that, but that's 100% true.
I know it's true. It's got to be.
Go ahead. Because actually,
nobody
funny,
just, you know.
Funny story is that's how we got to New Orleans. We were supposed to be living in Houston.
Oh.
Right? And he probably gonna be mad at me for telling the story, but whatever.
It's okay.
We was in the car. I was like 8. We're in the car together. I'm in the front seat. He's driving. I have 2 of my siblings in the back. They were younger than me. And he gets into a car accident. Boom. Right? Now, he was on the run from Jersey. Wound up turning himself in and doing his time for it. So all said and done, mm-hmm. right? But at the time, he was on the run for something in Jersey. Crashed into a truck. Never forget it. I was asleep. Woke up. Hit the truck. Boom. He tells me, make sure everybody gets home. Now, The reason why I can speak about this confidently is because most of my life, I remember that story and was like, that can't be true. I'm too young. Like, I was only like 8. You know what I'm saying? And for him to be in that situation and be like, make sure everybody get home. And when I asked him about it as an adult, maybe like 2 years ago, he was like, no, that's exactly what happened. He was like, because I knew that even at a young age, you could have got everybody home. Anyway, boom, hit the truck. Gets out, start talking to the police officer. He had his rucksack on his back. He grabbed his rucksack out the car, talked to the police, let me use the phone. He went over there. We was next to the hood. He went over there, used the phone, and then got low. I just seen cops. And then I think maybe, I don't know how much time later, night or two nights, whatever, week, I don't know. But my uncle came and moved us, took us to New Orleans. And then when I walked into the house in New Orleans, he was there.
Holy cow.
Right. That's how we got to New Orleans. So you said, like I said, I didn't even say that. I didn't tell that story. I didn't even say that. Like, you pulled that out the air. But anyway,
well, I did. I did, because I figured that's what he had to do. I mean, anybody on the run is ready to run.
Right.
Whenever they need to.
Right. But like I said, he went, you know.
It's not just in the movies.
later on, he wound up turning himself in on it. It was a terrible summer.
Yeah.
You know, him spending locked up and us having to fend for ourselves in New Orleans or whatever the case may be. So paid his debt to society and, you know, kept him moving upward since then.
Yeah. You know, we all have some of that in our lives, not necessarily as brutal or traumatizing as those kind of stories, but, you know, we try to get past them and stuff. But it had to have created a personality, a character, a mindset of, this is how I'm going to make money, this is what I'm going to do. And then you get to Athens and you're already starting to love rap. So is this what turned you to go to, you know what, I can do this? What took it to, how did you get from New Orleans coming to Athens and saying, hey, I'm issues?
Wow. Okay, so coming from New Orleans was a culture shock. It was a culture shock. I thought Athens was Mayberry. That's just how I looked at it. You know what I mean? I remember my dad, and this was pre-Olympics.
Okay.
Right. So that's like, you really have to distinguish that in Georgia. Like, pre-Olympics, post-Olympics. It's a totally different place.
Yeah.
Athens was a totally different place before the Olympics.
Yes.
Came to Atlanta.
Yes.
Right? So I remember he drove us down Broad Street and Atlanta Highway and said, the reason why I can mention it, because remember it, because it was kind of traumatizing. He was like, this is Canal Street. Right? And you've been to Canal Street. And I'm like, So when I first moved here, I remember like, I'm used to being in desired projects, and I'm used to being in neighborhoods where everywhere we lived in New Orleans, we lived in the hood. We probably moved maybe the short amount of time we was there, we probably moved, no lie, and I'm a under exaggerated, I'll say 8 times easy. Right?
Yeah,
and every time we lived somewhere else, it was in the hood. So I'm constantly having to reprove myself and read this, and you know what I mean? So like, being in those environments where you see people get killed. I remember being in this neighborhood called The Harbor, and we were all sitting in there as kids. We was playing Army Man, whatever it is we was doing. Somebody knocked on the door, and they got hit with a shotgun. They got hit with a bird shot. So my uncle and my pops and them was, you know, patching them up and all this kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? So like, we seen death as kids in New Orleans. You know what I'm saying? So by the time I moved here, I remember my mom got her Section 8 in Nelly B.
Okay.
And I was in school.
Yeah.
And I was like, at the time, we wasn't living in Nelly B. We was living on Millage Avenue. And I tell people in school, y'all moved to Nelly B. And it was like, man, Nelly B is. And that time, Nelly B was kind of off the hook. Man, Nelly B is. And I remember when I went to Nelly B, we moved in. I didn't even unpack my stuff. I walked out the house.
So used to moving or just?
Right. I wanted to see something. because most of the neighborhoods you move into in New Orleans, you have to know somebody there. You walk around as a stranger in some neighborhoods in New Orleans, mm-hmm. you're not going to make it home. Not unaccosted. Not unaccosted in some way. So anyway.
You know, I don't know whether you how old you were in Jersey, but, you know, I was part of the race riots in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, surrounded by black people and the dance hall.
Mm.
But my high school was 60% black and 40% white. Mm. So this, I couldn't understand why they were fighting me.
Yeah.
I loved being at that school.
Hey, some.
And it just, you know, I can remember people this big girl wanted to beat me up.
Yeah.
And this Stephanie friend of mine said, and she was black and we were just good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she stood in front of me. She goes, she's just people. Yeah. Leave her alone.
Yeah.
And that's the way my life, that probably is what affected me the most of just being people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nothing more.
Yeah.
So you're in Athens, you're starting to get into hip hop. How do you start it?
David Freeman, AKA Fort Knox.
Okay.
Well, David Freeman, Evan Coleman. David Freeman was the first person to inspire me. It's a bunch of people that on that list. Big Earl.
So there was a big
tycoon.
Big hip hop.
It was
community here, or just
it was definitely
a smattering, but it was big enough.
So you had
to start.
So you had the hip hop community, which was the local hip hop community, which was Della Della Tycoon, formerly known as Big Earl, Twin Boys, rest in peace to both of them. Dudes like Cedric Huff, Amun Ra, right? But it was, you had to be from here to participate in that.
I know that feeling.
Right. You had to be from here. It was certain places where the hip hop scene was jumping here in Athens that didn't necessarily cross paths with what people used to call the downtown scene.
Yeah.
Right? And you had to have a certain lowdown and duddy. Lowdown and duddy three times. So dudes like that who are already legends in Athens and putting out music and stuff like that or whatever the case may be. But, you know, so me and my friend who was from Chicago, we just started rapping. We formed a little group and we started rapping.
You writing it?
Yeah. Yeah, I've always written my own.
Okay.
Well,
because what I've been reading
mm-hmm.
is pretty intense, pretty poetic, pretty brutal at times. There's so much truth and so much violence and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's all snapshots of everything that I've gone through.
Wow.
And the thing that I'm most proud of about my music is that it's all inspired by real life.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, all these things, like we just kind of skimming it, but it's, we could spend a long, my life up to the point where I got to Athens and moved to Nelly B and walked around, it's a whole story by itself.
By itself, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
you started playing, and let's fast forward to KRS and what happened here in Atlanta. What got all that going?
Well.
And was you in Montu too?
Yeah.
Friends then? And
yeah, Matu went on tour with me.
Yeah.
I took Matu on tour with me.
No, I know.
Mm-hmm.
So was he part of the whole thing to get out, or you just took him?
I just took him.
Yeah.
At the time, when I first moved back to... Okay, so when I first started rapping, I just... The biggest thing that I did before moving back to New Jersey was me and... Danger Mouse collaborated
mm-hmm.
on our first track. He was just becoming a producer. I don't even think his name was Danger Mouse at the time. think his name was just Brian. And he did beats.
Mm-hmm.
And he produced, we used to play ball together too. So that's how I knew him. Him, his brother Scotty. So we was like part of the whole Ramsey Center basketball crew, whatever. And I found out he wanted to be a producer and he was doing beats. So he produced a track. I rhymed over the track. We recorded in his dorm. And so that was literally my first time ever even recording a song. So that was like a big deal.
So what was it like out there for you with traveling with KRS and Montu and you together doing your thing with them? And, you know, was it getting intense? Was it getting too over the top? Like, this isn't the way I should be living my life. Or this is exactly how I want to be living my life.
Oh, it was exactly what I wanted. It was exactly what I wanted. It was an interesting education, to put it like that. There's a lot that went on that tour. That number one, I had moments on that tour where it was like, okay, this is what I want to do. It got testy at times. You know, me and KRS-One. We kind of went through, you know, a lot of stuff, you know what I'm saying? So it got kind of testy at times. But the beautiful thing about it is by the end of the tour, we was able to kind of make amends. And I haven't seen him since then. It's a long time. But one thing I do know.
Well, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I hate that for you.
Well, I mean, we had a broken fence and we wound up mending it before I left. That was the most important thing.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we had a little bit of...
Who am I to say?
Yeah, so we went through... You know, I have tremendous respect, love, and admiration.
But you took a break then. Mm-hmm. Like, after that? In 2009, was it? Or 19?
Yeah, after...
When was that?
2010.
Yeah.
Yeah, around 2010. 2009, yeah. I was in Africa.
Okay.
And then 2010.
What were you looking for in Africa?
The opportunities. You know?
What kind of opportunities? What do you mean? Bring it there?
I mean, it was at the time when I was out there, a lot of the artists that wasn't really doing anything that you didn't hear about in the States were over on the continent touring.
Mm.
The Fat Joes and the 50 Cents and the you know... I can't name them all right now, but
yeah,
I had an opportunity while I was out there. I had worked to get an opportunity while I was out there to just stay on the continent and tour. And like, not necessarily tour, but what are your tour? But from the standpoint of anyone, this particular company that was like a talent agency, a big time broker, whatever, would bring artists who were not necessarily A-list at the time. But, you know, I think Fat Joe was on the list. 50 Cent was on the list. R. Kelly before he got locked up. So, and it was like, yeah, you just stay out here and open for them. Like, when I was out there, I opened for Jurassic 5.
I had no idea those artists were doing that then because...
Yeah.
Did I work at Koch? No, I didn't work at Koch then.
Yeah.
And when I was doing a lot of one-off albums with Koch on...
Me and Mos Def did an episode together on a program out there for like MTV2 or something like that in South Africa. So, yeah, that's a lot of that was going on. So when I was out there, I was working on an opportunity to be able to kind of stay out there and just open for big-time acts and artists. And then over time of me doing it and gathering my own steam.
Was it like in Africa? What were the crowds like?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Honest.
That's an interesting word.
Honest. I had to earn every bit of stage time. And there was certain times where things got violent in the audience. And I had to really, really like, if you're not really an MC, they'll chew you up and spit you out there. Chew you up and spit you out.
They don't have much, but they will have their music.
They will chew you up and spit you out because they all are, you ain't never seen hunger till you see that type of hunger. So, when I was out there,
that's
this
what
was
I'm
the
saying.
Time where like mumble rap and all that was kind of dominating.
Uh-huh.
When every time they announced me, they would announce me from Atlanta. and I would get booed every time. Booed every time.
But why would they?
My mouth. They did not respect United States hip hop. No.
Oh, okay.
Hip hop from the States, they did not, because that was a time where the Yin Yang Twins and, you know what I mean, like the mumble rap, the club stuff, the South was kind of dominating. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So over there, they still respect real hip hop, real lyricists. They, you know what I'm saying? And plus, the people out there in Africa are very literate. Very, very literate. So when you talk, they are listening to what you're saying. And this is how I would open, especially after getting booed. Issues from Atlanta. Boo. I will always open with an acapella and shut them up. They start.
That's pretty.
Now they listening. Right. So this, now they're listening like, oh, okay. He know what he talking about. And then from there, I'll rock a song. And then, you know, going in it from there. So they listening. So if you're not, really don't have nothing to say and you really ain't dope, they'll drag you off stage.
Oh, my God.
No, they will drag you off stage.
I mean, I shouldn't be surprised by this, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But I am. I just had no idea it was that much. Mm-hmm. And that kind of response and that kind of how they demanded.
Mm-hmm. I've had to battle people off the top of the head. Like everyone thinks you shouldn't have that opportunity. They should have it. And they better than you. So like every stage show almost that I did out there, I had to deal with some sort of confrontation and earn it.
Wow.
And once I got done with it, they like, okay, you official. You know what I'm saying? And
so then you came back and you kind of needed to slow down a little bit?
Yeah, I just cut it completely. It was honestly, it was just a lot going on with the family.
Your particular family or your siblings or?
My wife, well, ex-wife now. Children and, you know, just a lot of, it was, you know, pretty much kind of like an ultimatum type deal. Like, you know, like, okay. So like, I'm not going to even know, because all of this happened when I was still over there.
Mm.
And I made a decision before I left. I turned down the deal. That was the decision. When they offered me the opportunity, because I had to stay out there for like a year, maybe two, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Until I built up my own steam. And I was already like, I had already been interviewed by number one radio station in Johannesburg or in South Africa. Johannesburg, Durban.
Yeah.
Zimbabwe. So I was making my rounds and I just put out a mixtape. So things were moving and, you know, it just came to a thing where I have to make a decision. Either I'm going to continue my career, take advantage of all the things that I worked on, or I have to cut this short and go home and be a full-time dad and full-time husband.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the choice I made.
Well, sometimes we make those tough decisions because, you know, I was talking to a young man a couple of weeks ago and, you know, he broke up with his girlfriend because he wasn't ready. He wanted the time.
Yeah.
He wasn't ready. He was going to go after his dream and he's, you know, kind of a TikTok star right now and all this stuff. And he said it's a hard decision, but he wasn't ready to be with someone that, you know, wanted too much of his time.
Yeah.
And this is what he was building because you wrote on your Facebook page, I stalked you on that too.
Go for it.
You wrote, if you trigger my old ways, I'm gonna remove you from my life. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to be set back. I'm trying to grow and make better decisions. Is that your old ways before you went home to your wife and your family? Is that what your old ways were and that's where you started building your new ways?
No, my old ways, what I meant by that particular post is I grew up around a lot of violence. Right. I grew up around a lot of violence and was conditioned in a lot of ways to always have violent responses. So whether that's physical violence or verbal violence. And what I'm realizing now, after therapy and self-reflection and life journeys and stuff like that, is that those things and those ways were just ways. They wasn't me. You know what I'm saying? So when I say trigger old ways,
yeah,
or old things, these are things, and you know, depending on what neighborhood you live in or what situation that you win, you have to, you know, adopt certain mentalities and responses and stuff like that. So that's what I meant. Really.
Do you think that you were still fighting yourself a little bit and you know, trying to hang on to those ways because you didn't think you could do anything else? And then one day maybe you stopped fighting yourself?
Yeah, that's safe. That's fair to say. That's fair to say. I have been fighting myself for a long time. And
I kind of know what that's like myself, too. I mean, but not nearly.
Yeah.
I mean, not nearly is what...
Because the thing I realized about myself in recent scenarios and situations that I've gone through is that a lot of those ways just really was never me. It's just not me. You know what I'm saying? And, but...
Was it survival?
I don't think it was survival. I just think it was conditioning through association.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like I said, I grew up around violent people.
Yeah.
I grew up around violence, like violence as a culture, violence as a everything. Like even I got 9 brothers. We all grew up expressing ourselves to each other violently. We fought. We yelled and screamed. I remember me and my brother was outside having a conversation about basketball in front of Walgreens and Commerce, and the cops pulled up. And they were like, "Yo, we heard 2 people out here arguing." I'm like, "This is my brother. We out here having a passionate conversation about basketball." But that's just, you know, when we all go play basketball together, it's usually violent. Like, you know what I mean? So like,
yeah, no, I get it. Because now, you know, you teach school, you teach martial arts and training for boxing, and you make these kids work. I saw a couple of those videos too, and I'm like, I would be dead. You would kill me. And you work with kids besides at school.
All right.
Among other things, and give to this community so faithfully. And so I guess I'm asking this also. You've done so much for Athens in the last few years. I know the last years have been hard for you, but you're still very positive in your songs. And you know your messages.
Right.
I think you know your music is very uplifting, and your messages are the truth. The truth as you know it, and it's very honest, and it's very painful for you sometimes, I think, because you go to the dark side a little bit. But do you go to the dark side a little bit just to remind these kids, I've been there?
Yeah.
You don't want to go there.
Yeah. That's really like the purpose of anything you see me post on my social media or whatever. It's like, primarily, I'm a real private person. You know what I'm saying? Like deep down inside, I'm really a problem. I really don't like attention. Never have, you know, from growing up. Like, so when I post things, it's usually coming from a standpoint of I'll go there to show you that we all go there at some point.
Yeah.
And coming out of it and then show you me coming out of it to tell you that you can do it too. Because that's always been the purpose of my music anyway. That was the reason why I chose the name Issues anyway. I chose Issues after I got back to Athens. I was two other entities before.
You know, so you do all this stuff for Athens, but what has Athens done for you? And what does it mean for you?
Athens has shown me a lot of love. And I can genuinely say that because going back to the original question about showing the world who I am or showing Athens who I am or whatever the case may be, I didn't necessarily have a place where I fit in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a rapper or MC, yeah, but I don't have a Southern twang. I don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't talk about certain... I'm not talking about being a dope boy, and I'm not, you know what I'm saying? I'm not doing the things that people gravitate towards. People just respected the fact that at the time, you know, freestyle battling was a big deal. When I first came to Athens, I was really good at freestyle battling back when, you know, the 8 Mile years and all that kind of stuff.
I've always been fascinated by
I've always been. That's really where my career started, just being, you know, an attraction when it came to whenever freestyle battles we have. I'm killing everybody.
Well, on your I listened to your Legacy album. Mm-hmm. God, it was good. Mm. Polar Bears.
Mm.
Whew. I had some of the lyrics here, but I don't see them. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I put them. Whether I put them in these notes or. But your Polar Bear. The metaphorical polar bear about extinction of the black people and not just men. When you wrote that, your message was, look, we're still struggling. Do you think it's ever going to stop? It's just been horrible what has happened to the African American, black people, whatever you want to call them, people. And it's still horrendous and still makes me cry because I'm Jewish. I know slavery. I know certainly right now discrimination. And anti-Semitism. And I'm like, WTF, what is going to make this world change? And right now, it's so deep into the vortex of what's happening. Do you think anything could ever come out of all of this one day that can make people understand the struggles and the education that people don't get, and having to never break, you know, the ties. It just goes from one generation to another because nothing ever freaking changes.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to say. I feel like that album, you really did try.
Yes.
You really did try to make changes and to put words out there for people to listen to, absorb into their soul.
Yes. I did. You listened.
I did listen.
You did?
I cried a couple of songs, so the polar bear one. I'm getting teary-eyed right now.
Wow.
I just felt like...
No one's ever asked me about that song. That's I don't even think I've ever performed it, but go ahead.
I just listened to it. That's all I can say is I listened to it. I know that there's other songs that are much more popular than
that's
that
a deep
song,
one, though. That's
but
a,
that was a deep one. Yeah. I mean, these are all your lyrics that I printed. I mean, just... it's just the black on black is...
We have to change the culture.
We have to change the culture.
And one thing that I'm advocating for, you know, and I go back and forth with people on Facebook about the subject of hip hop. And I think starting there, the culture of hip hop needs to be reexamined and taught so that we can change our culture as Black people, because we associate a lot of our culture from the things that we get from hip hop, or even if it's not hip hop, what we think hip hop is, which is a very, 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 very clear distinction. It's two different things.
Yeah.
And because I feel like a lot of the people who have gatekept the culture were too busy trying to sell it out to the mainstream rap industry to try to get some coin out of it.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, we lost the primary function of the culture.
Yeah.
Which was all this money and stuff don't matter. It's about community health. It's about family. It's about, you know, it's about stop the killing. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Like, really, gangster rap is the antithesis of hip hop. So if you a gangster rapper or a drill rapper and people are like, oh, he's hip hop just because you like him, if you really think about it, hip hop started as an anti-gang culture. So that was the primary.
Well,
that really
Run,
was the primary.
Run DMC and
right,
all
but that was the primary. That was the primary function.
Yeah.
We out here killing each other, so let's turn these gangs into crews.
And you certainly still singing that today.
Right. So we, the Polar Bear song, right, was really about us bringing about our own extinction.
Yes.
We're on the, just like the rhinos, just like the polar bears, we're actually, we need some conservation as well. We need to start to have some... How do we have conservation meetings about the dolphins and all these different, how do we have conversations about the
so it's not the world changing the culture, it's the internal, the inside of
we
the culture.
Have to change the culture.
You have
we
to
have
change
to change
it.
The culture. We have to start being more proactive about being dead set on boundaries. This is what we're going to allow and this is what we're not going to allow.
Yeah.
And too many times, and what that starts with is the families. We need to strengthen the families. You know, we've lost family structure. So as a result, you know, people let any and everybody raise their kids, including rappers.
Yeah.
But if all rappers you think is hip hop and you've been told by the elders that hip hop is the culture you're supposed to subscribe to, but you don't know the difference between hip hop and rap.
Yeah.
Hip hop culture and rap culture.
It's like Montu wears on his jacket. Hip hop saved my life.
Yeah.
Well, I got to ask you, so as a kind of a parting discussion, question, statement, I don't know. I know the last 4 years, like I said, had been tough. I know you had a very serious attack on your body from somebody, I believe, at your business, correct? I don't need to get into the details of it with you. But you seem so at peace with your life right now since I've met you. And it appears that these good and better decisions are working out for you. Is there a gospel to your message these days?
Adapt and overcome.
I told you.
No, I love it. Adapt and overcome. Never know what life's going to throw at you.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to adapt and overcome, you know? So when that happened or when other things happen, because life happens, you know what I'm saying? And that's me calling myself issues is kind of making myself the avatar for... the everyday person struggle.
Yeah.
We all have issues so we all can relate. That was the mantra of that.
Amen.
So me getting, you know, me being attacked or me going through whatever it is I go through in life, everybody goes through these things. You know, so adapt and overcome. And that's part of the reason why I love boxing so much. because that's what boxing is all about, adapting and overcome. When I'm in here working and teaching, you see me working these kids, it's about getting their body conditioned to be able to adapt and overcome. You never know what your opponent going to come out the corner with.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We got to always, as a team, be willing to, you know, go through the adversity. You almost got knocked out. You almost got dropped. You got to be able to adapt and overcome.
Well, Ish, this has been so great for me, rewarding for me, pleasant for me, deep, intense, magical in some ways. And I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me about these things. I just knew the other day, well, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago now, because time goes by fast, that I needed to talk to you and people needed to listen to you.
Well, I appreciate you reaching out. This is probably my best interview.
Oh, well, thank you.
You did your homework. You came with some. I enjoyed this one. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome.
It is.
Anything you want to say to Athens about what you do or how to get a hold of you?
Okay, yeah. Art of Boxing Training Center, number one. We have youth classes, adult classes. That's located at 1001 Winterville Road in Athens, Georgia, on the east side. You can get in contact with me through my email, which is issues@gmail.com, ISHUES@gmail.com, or my Facebook, which is we have a Coach Ish Boxing Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Coach Ish Boxing. So you can get in touch with me through there. Or Issues Cuthbertson, that's my regular primary Facebook, or my Instagram is issues_DA artist.
Well,
and issues_DA_artist.
Issues.
ISHUES_DA_.
Oh, EA.
DA.
Oh, DA.
Duh. DA underscore artist.
Oh, okay.
Look out for the album I'm about to drop on all streaming platforms and also on my website.
Legendary, is that what it's called?
Legendary, yeah.
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 I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, because I'm looking forward to putting that out because I got three more albums behind it.
Well, I'm sure you know what Ishmael, or your real name, means in the Bible, don't you?
No, tell me.
Okay, in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to find the exact words here.
I don't think I've ever known that.
Well, my son's name is Simon, and that is one who hears. Ishmael is God hears.
Wow.
It does have a little bit more prophetic meaning in Islamic, more of a prophet type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Old Testament, it is God is hearing.
Wow. 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 I never knew that.
I looked that stuff up.
Yeah, man. See, that's what I'm saying. You do your research, man. Wow.
Yeah.
This is great.
Thank you. Well, we get to hug each other now when we see each other, go to lunch.
Right.
See each other. We can break bread together.
Right. Let's do that.
All kinds of good stuff now. See?
Let's do that.
See what happens?
Yeah. With conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This has been my pleasure. Really, really. Thank you for reaching out.
Oh, well, I'll shake your hand, but that's not happening when we get up. And thank everybody for listening to Athcast Music.